Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 91 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John. And this episode is all about SEO and topic clusters. Now, if you're not familiar with that, topic clusters have been a big trend in content marketing and SEO, and with a good reason. However, the way that the model is created doesn't take the user into consideration. And there's nothing more frustrating as a consumer than being forced down the funnel when you're not ready or not really finding the next step you need in your journey. In this episode, Carolyn Liddon, she is the founder of SearchHermit.com, and she's been in SEO for 10 years. She proposes a user-focused content matrix to remedy the inward-looking content generation method with the topic cluster model. So in this episode 91, you'll learn first why the topic cluster model is good for SEO, but not always great for the website visitor. Second, how to create a user-focused content matrix that lets you plan your brand content editorial calendar around both the user and the search results. And third, the biggest misconception when it comes to SEO. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. And if you're interested about getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growth today to sponsor this podcast for as little as $2 per episode. Enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Carolyn. Hey everybody, I'm excited to have Carolyn here. She is here to talk about SEO. She is also working at founded SearchHermit.com.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Carolyn? How are things with you?
I'm doing really well today. We were talking about the weather earlier, and it's gloomy and rainy here today, but that's a good day to stay inside and work on some SEO.
Well, let's talk about that. I want to hear your story about how you became an SEO consultant and consultant for women-owned businesses through SearchHermit.com.
Yeah. So I started out in a family-owned business. Essentially, my grandma owned a business and everyone in the family worked in it. And so I sort of, even me as a kid, I participated on weekends in things like stuffing envelopes and answering phones and things like that. So I sort of got an understanding very early on about the back end of small businesses and local businesses, and specifically women-owned businesses and some of the struggles that they faced in particular. And then after I graduated college, I got degrees in English literature and writing communications with a minor in psychology, which I thought at the time was the perfect combination to get into marketing. So I started as a copywriter. And my first job out of college was working at a small agency that was a woman-owned business that served industries that really focused on like women as target audiences. So things like the pediatric dentists, the moms were generally making that decision in families, medical things, medical industry, healthcare, stuff like that. So sort of got that perspective working both agency side. And then later I worked in-house at a couple of different companies, helping them build their SEO departments from the ground up. And so I feel like I got a really great mix of learning how small businesses work, working agency side to sort of understand how you can manage multiple clients and multiple accounts, and then working in-house to really understand how to help bigger businesses grow. And eventually I got to the point where I was like, I bet I could, you know, branch out on my own and do this and really make a difference for those businesses that are either just starting out, women-owned businesses who are just launching, or people who are sort of in that high growth phase that need SEO, that don't necessarily, a lot of times I think people have, they've tried everything else. And so they're like, all right, SEO is sort of my last ditch effort. They don't know a ton about it and they want to integrate it into their systems, into their marketing ecosystems. So helping those businesses either launch or continue in that rapid growth phase. And it's been really amazing so far. I really enjoy it.
That's awesome. And I actually want to talk a little bit about what you wrote down on your website about a lot of SEO folks when they look up the latest SEO related content strategy. One of them is content cluster model. I'm curious what you think about that. For my listeners who don't know, first of all, can you explain what that is and why I read on your site that you think it's broken?
Yeah, I think we created the topic cluster model sort of as a bridge between the user and then what we want on the SEO focus side. And like you were saying, the topic cluster model is essentially you have an overarching general topic that you decide you're going to deep dive into with the content on your site. And it's sort of like a tree graph. You start with the main topic and then you branch out from there into more specific elements of that topic. And they all sort of fall under this umbrella of the main topic cluster. And so you can have different clusters based on different elements of your business. Say if you're like an accounting software company, you may have a topic cluster focus on small businesses, and you may have a topic cluster focus on enterprise, because those people have different, or those businesses have different pain points and different struggles, and they may need different solutions or different elements of the same solution. So the topic cluster model also helps on the SEO side with things like interlinking, because all of the articles within a specific topic cluster group would, of course, be linked to each other. They would be linked to the very top level topic cluster page. So it's beneficial for SEO. And I don't think it's bad altogether. But I do think that when we created the topic cluster model, or I don't know exactly who created it, but as it's sort of evolved, it's really focused on the search engines and how they sort of see our content and the structure of our websites. And if you've ever gone into a website as a user and gone, especially to sites who have used this topic cluster model, it's kind of hard to find exactly what you need sometimes, or you'll get to a blog article, for example, from a search engine result. And you think, okay, well, I read the article, like, what do I do next? And there's not a lot of attention paid, I think, to leading people down the user funnel based on how they or where they land on your website. And I think that's one of the drawbacks of the topic cluster model. We just like, we got them in, guys, and then we don't do anything once they're on our sites.
That's so true. And that's why I think, and I'm kind of leading you to that thing that I read on your website, is that you propose using a user focus content matrix. Can you talk a little bit about that? And you're already alluding to it about leading them down the funnel.
Yeah, for sure. So the idea of this like user-focused content matrix is planning out your content, which a lot of companies do already. We all have editorial calendars. We plan things in advance to make it easier to, you know, do the keyword research and create the content. But this model also focuses on individual target audiences. So creating essentially a spreadsheet for each individual target audience, focusing on their pain points, and then looking at that individual pain point for that individual target audience at each stage of the funnel, and how your product or service helps solve that issue at every stage. So whether they're at the very top, the awareness stage, they don't necessarily, or they know they might have a problem, but they don't know that there's a solution out there. You're just trying to sort of convince them that they should research solutions. And then there's the middle of the funnel. They know they have an issue. Now they know that they should be looking for a solution. So you sort of need to explain why your product or service is the step in the right direction. Not necessarily your specific product or service, but like your genre of product or service. So I mentioned accounting software earlier. So if I have a small business that's trying to do their own accounting, or they've tried to hire someone on the outside of their business to do it, and they're like, this just is way too expensive. And maybe they don't know that there's a software out there that can help walk them through it and do it for them. So the middle of the funnel is saying, hey, you have a problem with your accounting. Did you know that you could ditch like having a third-party accountant altogether, and you could just go with accounting software? And then the bottom of the funnel is where you essentially say, of all the accounting software you're looking at, you should definitely check out ours. And here are the reasons why we will benefit your particular business the most. And then I think a lot of people forget, once we've closed a sale or we have a conversion, whatever that means for your business, people forget to continue to like make your existing customers happy. And part of that is, I think, creating the content that helps them understand how to use your product or service, how to use it better, or, you know, optimize the way they're using it, so that when they have friends who are also, you know, small business owners in this example, who are saying, my accountant is the worst, they'll say, oh, I just got this new accounting software, you should check it out. So far, it's solved all these problems for me. And that can be another source of referrals for your business too. So I think the model really looks at not just bringing in qualified traffic from search engine results, but then what do we do after we drive that traffic? Because we want to boost ROI altogether, not just be like, yay, we got more people to come to the site.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think a lot of website owners or business owners, their typical goal when it comes to SEO is like, oh, I just want to get ranked number one for this search terms. And they don't really think about that, the user engagement and user journey, right?
Yeah. I have so many business owners that they'll come to me and we'll talk about their goals and how SEO can help their business. And I've said this so many times before, I feel like I'm always repeating myself, but I really like to hit it home that a lot of times small businesses, especially, or businesses that are in the rapid growth phase, they have these goals that they think are important. Like, they think certain metrics are really important to their business. Like you're saying, we need to rank number one for this term. But if you're ranking number one for a term that's not relevant to the kind of people who are qualified to, you know, come in and then make a sale or buy something from you or sign up for your service or whatever it is, then it doesn't mean anything that you're ranking number one if you're not making money off of it somehow.
That's so true. I'm curious what other metrics they should be tracking for, you know, particularly looking at that user engagement when they a user finally clicks through to their site.
Yeah, so it varies based on sort of what your business model is, and I think some people also, it's important to measure for some people these sort of micro conversions along the way. So if you have a longer sales cycle, it may be important to measure, oh, this person signed up for our email list. That's like a smaller conversion toward the larger goal of a sale or, you know, signing up for a product or service, or this person signed up for a demonstration from our sales team or from me. If you're a local business and or a small business and you're a sole proprietor sort of thing. So I think the micro conversions that you can measure along the way are really important. And then obviously the measuring the things that actually tie to your bottom line, like somebody scheduled a phone call to talk to me, or they called me from my Google My Business page, or they filled out the contact form, or, you know, I've worked with some businesses that have like a spec form on their site. So someone fills out even more detail about what they're looking for in a product or service and sends that along to the sales team of the business. So it's important to rank, because oftentimes ranking higher for a term that's important to your business does mean more qualified traffic and more potential conversions, whatever those conversions mean for your business. But oftentimes I think people get so caught up in the ranking part when, especially as Google's search results sort of evolve and change, we're getting a lot of rich snippets and people sort of get the answer they need without having to click through to your site a lot of times. So there are now like recipes in search results, and you can ask, what is the price of XYZ? And it'll show up in search results, or how old is this celebrity or this football player or something like that. So it's not benefiting a business oftentimes to rank number one or be the featured snippet for those kind of results when people aren't clicking through, when they're getting the result they need from the search result and then exiting. So that's one instance where it may be great that you're ranking number one, but it's not benefiting your business's bottom line in the long run.
So that's a good point, right? Like, you, those featured snippets, they don't click through, you probably might not want to rank for those, or maybe it's good for brand, but like overall you want them to click through. I'm curious what your strategies are once somebody does click through. How can companies increase the engagement to get users to actually move down that funnel?
Yeah, and to sort of touch on what you were saying before, I do think it depends on the featured snippet. Some are worth ranking for, and because I do think there's sort of an incomplete answer and people will click through, but some of them where a user will get the full answer in the featured snippet, they obviously won't click through for that sort of thing. But to touch on your other question, I think that one thing that always really annoys me as a user of websites is when I'm in that top of funnel, more awareness phase, I'm just generally researching about my options, and someone on whatever website they've created is like, oh, here is the general top of funnel information you're looking for. And are you ready to buy now? And I'm like, no, I'm not ready to buy yet. Like I still need to research other options or see what's going on. You know, will I even need this product or service in a couple months or a couple years, sort of thing. And so I call that when we try to like start shoving people down the funnel, like hurry up, buy already, when they're not at that particular funnel stage. So one way that businesses can initially sort of increase engagement and the flow of people through their sites is to target in whatever piece of content you're creating, target the next stage of the funnel in a way that addresses the same pain point that the piece that the person is reading does. So if I'm at the very top of the funnel and I'm searching just like stainless steel refrigerators, the next phase of the funnel is, hey, do you want to compare three brands of stainless steel refrigerators? And do you want to see what these like French door versus the bottom freezer things look like? And what cubic feet do you, or what size refrigerator do you actually need? Because they come in different sizes. So that's sort of the next stage that I have to go through before I can get to the buying part.
Right. That totally makes sense. How do you like get them to actually click through the next step? Like, the different sizes of, let's say, the fridge with that example.
Yeah. So that's sort of on the matrix side. That's sort of where creating the content that really flows from like the overarching target audience, targeting their individual pain points and saying, okay, this is how I address this pain point at the top of the funnel and then the middle of the funnel and the bottom of the funnel. And then creating that call to action. That's essentially like, hey, we've addressed, you know, your awareness phase. Here's what we've created to help you in the next stage of the funnel. So creating that sort of targeted call to action. And it's almost, I know some companies also have personalization options. So depending on how you're cooking people and how that works based on where you're located in the world now, but you can essentially, as people continually engage with your site, as they sign up for your email list, as they sign up for a webinar or a demonstration, it sort of collectively adds that information to your CRM. And then when they revisit your website, they're still cookied. So it sort of keeps that information in mind and serves them up the next stage of the funnel that they would be in the research process. That's like a little more advanced. And I know a lot of small companies and small businesses don't have that. And that's why I generally encourage people to plan out their content for the target audience, the specific pain point people have, and then how you address that at each stage of the funnel and then have the call to action go to the next phase of the funnel.
When we come back in just a moment, Carolyn describes the user-focused content matrix and how that can help you get more conversions with your organic traffic. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are our RevOps and demand generation shop, and they help B2B SaaS businesses streamline operations, implement new tech stack, and design ABM and demand generation strategies. Now, they help you create a predictable revenue pipeline. Their past clients include OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogix, FlexDay, and more. You can book a free consultation at 42.agency/GMT. That's FORTYTWO.agency/GMT. And I know that my friend there, Camille, he is the founder of that agency. He knows what he's doing. So shout out to him. Go check it out. The link is in the description of this show. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Carolyn. I'm curious what you think about gated content. Like, where would you, which part, like, I'm guessing maybe somewhere in the middle or bottom where you would start asking for email address. Like, what are your thoughts about like gating content? Because some people have been, I forget who, but there are some companies who are like so against it, they just leave everything open.
Yeah, well, I understand the use of gated content, and I actually am like in the process of trying to test some of that out for my business as well. So it's an interesting model for sure. But overarchingly, especially from the SEO side, I feel this is going to sound negative, but I feel I don't really love gated content because we're sort of, I get the exchange. So if I exchange my information, my email address, then I will get whatever it is that this company or person has spent their time and money creating to help, you know, get me or to help me understand a certain amount of information about their product or service. So I get that on the very basic level, but I also hate that there's like this weird exchange for information. And like anytime I personally try to find something and and it's gated, I will go like use some search qualifiers and like look for the PDF online and hope that they haven't like no indexed it or hidden it behind something so that I could just find it without signing up. But that might be just like the SEO in me. And I also think there's an element of gated content where you're, as the marketer, you are, that's really great information that could potentially help you in search engine results, depending on what it is. And you're hiding it behind essentially a login or something like that. So people can't, well, search engines can't find it. And that could really help you depending on what it is. So I know that was like a milquetoast answer.
I have
mixed feelings about it. I understand why people do it, but I wish that, like you were saying, it was something that wasn't necessarily something we did as marketers, but I don't know. It feels almost gimmicky to me. And like I said, all that said, it's something that I'm thinking of trying out on my site too, in a way that is actually useful to people though. I guess what turns me off from gated content is I feel like oftentimes you'll exchange your information and then what you get in return is just more sales stuff. So it's almost like I was saying, like people push you down the funnel when really I just want more information. And so anytime you create gated content, I would say to actually make it useful. One thing I really hate is when people like hype up something and then they're like, you got to call us or sign up for a demo to see more. And I'm like, man, I gave you my email for this. So if you are going to make gated content, be like honest and a good, decent marketer about it. Like make it worth someone's exchange of their email address. And otherwise they're just going to unsubscribe anyway.
Yeah. I mean, in some sense you feel kind of ripped off. Like you're expecting something and you actually don't get what you were expecting.
Yes. Or I did this for a webinar once. I went to, I felt so tricked. I went to this webinar and this woman was like, don't worry, I'm not like all these other webinars. Like I'm not gonna just like hype up whatever it is and then just sell you at the end. And then I got on and it was like the same formula that every webinar is, which is like, I was in a terrible place before and here's pictures of me being sad when I was in place. And then I found this solution and look how great I'm doing now. Like I'm a bazillionaire. And then I was like, okay, she's going to tell us more. And then she's like, sign up for my product. It's only thousands of dollars. And I was like, I fell for it. I wasted an hour.
The problem is it works, right? Like that story driven. Yeah, it sucks when that happens.
So be a good marketer and make sure you're giving people useful content that even if they didn't purchase your product or service, they would benefit from having.
And I think that goes to building that kind of relationship where like now they kind of start sensing you as your company or your brand as almost like a friend. So when you're ready to make that business transaction, they're more likely to stick around longer, right?
Yes, that's actually, I tell people often that one of my favorite blogs that I love to visit, it's one of the only blogs that I just actually type into my browser on my own, is Zapier's productivity blog. And some of the blog content is about Zapier and how to use Zapier and how to make it, you know, how to increase your productivity using their product. But a lot of it is also like how to use other free products or services like Google Sheets or the science behind productivity and stuff like that. It's like general good information. And when I have a client who's like, oh, I don't know how to, I have these like two separate solutions, I don't know how to connect them, Zapier is my go-to solution because I know that they'll have the information on how to do it, but also that they'll provide like general useful information for my everyday work life as well. So I see them as the thought leader in that area. And so when, like you were saying, when I need that product or service, I know that I can trust them because they've given me such helpful information on, you know, myriad topics before.
That's so good. I'm curious also when you adopted this user-focused content matrix for your clients, can you maybe share, you don't have to say the company name, but like any kind of impact that you've achieved through this more funnel-focused approach?
Yeah, so we've definitely, I think it helps businesses also sort of focus on the metrics behind their content. So one of the main things I tell people is before we even start planning anything out, the first thing you need to do is to tie your content to your company goals. So some people have annual, quarterly, monthly, whatever goals. And if your goals are to, for example, for this accounting software that we've been talking about that I've made up, if your goals are to like increase subscriptions from small businesses 20% year over year, for your whole company, then use that metric for your content, for creating your content too. So if that's your company goal, then why wouldn't you create content for those individual users? Because they're going to research it online, sort of thing. So I think that's one thing that a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. But we've never tied our content to a company goal. They've tied it specifically to marketing goals or sales goals. So sort of zooming out a little and seeing what are those company goals and how can content specifically contribute to it. That's been a game changer, I think, for a lot of people. And then there's an element of it that's actually learning about what your customers want or your target audiences want. And I think a lot of marketers are like, oh, we know what our target audiences want. And I worked with one company, for example, that was like, oh, we work specifically with marketing agencies and we know that this is a specific problem for them. And then when they actually talked to marketing agencies, they found that the thing that thought was such a huge problem, they didn't care about it at all. They were like, oh, that doesn't cost us money. We're not worried about that. We're worried about like retention and turnover. Like who cares how much we pay for a software service if, you know, the companies or the clients that we're working with don't renew every year, sort of thing. Which when you zoom out makes a little sense, but you know, we didn't talk to them. We assumed that the product cost was so important to them. And it wasn't. They don't pass it on. They just want to make sure they get their clients year over year. So I think for a lot of companies, figuring out what their target audiences actually want and then how their product or service helps move them to that goal has been eye-opening for a lot of people too. And then I've also discovered that a lot of people, in the shoving people down the funnel vein, they have a top of funnel and they have a bottom of funnel, but nobody pays attention to the middle of the funnel in general. It's like a common problem across marketing departments. We're like, we have so many people to draw in as much traffic as possible. We have this demand generation. We're getting tons of leads into our system and we have tons of salespeople to close those leads, but there's nobody that's like nurturing the leads along in the process or paying attention to what the middle of the funnel means for their individual business. It's surprising. And then of course, not specifically, but I've seen, or not to name anyone specifically, but I've definitely seen people increase like the overall traffic that's coming into their site from organic search and then seeing people convert from blogs. And I think that's, a lot of companies are like, blogs are sort of just our fluff. They're supplemental. They don't actually help in the sales and marketing process. They're sort of just there when we need them. And to see the content that people are creating sort of help engage people and move them along and like convert them and help bring, you know, money to the ROI or to the bottom line is things that I think a lot of companies have been like, oh, we didn't know we could get this from our blog.
And so they went just from blog and then just signing up directly without any kind of middle of the funnel stuff?
Or like they're seeing how the blog engages more in the whole funnel process. Yeah. And so, you know, yeah, there are some people who will just sign up directly from the blog, but they'll sort of like I do with Zapier, like they'll come back and engage and see what's new and like, how can this help me in my everyday business? And they'll sign up for the email newsletter to make sure that they're getting the blog content that's coming out regularly. It's sort of like that middle of the funnel that people are missing, the engagement and nurturing along the way so that when they are ready to buy, you're top of mind and you're seen as the thought leader in that area.
That totally makes sense. I was just going to ask about the middle of funnel content, but you just answered it. Like you have like very helpful stuff. And the good example you brought up is Zapier. Like you refer Zapier because their content is very useful and helpful.
Yeah. And whether I just want to figure out like, oh, how do I use Google Sheets to create a project plan, to how do I specifically use Zapier to connect these two separate software solutions? There's always something useful on their site and something interesting, even if it's just like the psychology of productivity, stuff like fun stuff like that.
That totally makes sense. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about SEO audits. I know you... Yeah. You know, what are some of the biggest mistakes that businesses make when you know, with the company, the business that you've worked with when it comes to SEO?
I think sort of one of the largest maybe misconceptions is that people sort of think SEO is its own side marketing activity. And I try to, when I work with companies, I try to sort of influence everyone to sort of see SEO as more of the foundation of a like really great marketing ecosystem, because I believe that search engine optimization isn't just about optimizing for search engines, even though that's what the name says. But search engines, their goal is to optimize for people. And so we should also be, we should be sort of skipping over the search engines and also trying to optimize for people. And when you do that, that's essentially what marketing as a whole is, that's what our goal is trying to do. So we're trying to figure out, like, sort of like I've been hitting on this whole time, we're trying to figure out what it is our users want. How do we provide the best solution for their product or service, or our product or service provide the best solution for their pain points? And then how can we help them generally along the way? And I think because SEO is really focused on things like, what are people searching? How, you know, what words are people using when they're looking for a product or service? And that like keyword research element can really help inform all elements of digital marketing, and even help further on into like sales and customer success and customer support, because you're getting all the information that people essentially are looking for in Google. And you can say, hey, you know, customer success, people are looking for this issue they're having on our site. Like, is that what you're seeing as well? And like, how can we address that so that you're not getting a ton of calls about that? We can address it on the front end, sort of thing. And you know, we can take the information that we're learning from our keyword research and use that on our social media content and then our email marketing and in our ads. So it's, like I said, it's kind of like an ecosystem, and I wish more people saw it that way. And I think that's one of the big misunderstandings about SEO is, you know, we've all heard, can you just SEO it? And I'm like, no, I can't just like take what should be a general ecosystem and like refine it down into like one tiny thing and just do it for one single piece of content and have it be successful. It has to sort of be the underpinning of the whole foundation and what philosophy behind like what we're doing as a marketing department and a company. That's when I think the biggest misconceptions I see. And then like on the audit side, people don't necessarily always understand that SEO is multifaceted. It doesn't just, a lot of people are like, so it's just the title tags and the meta descriptions, right? And I'm like, well, your title tags and meta descriptions don't matter if a search engine can't crawl your site at all. So if Google can't see what's on your site, or you're blocking them from it, or anything like that, then it doesn't matter how much on-page SEO you do or how much amazing content you write. Google can't see it. So SEO has like so many different elements that sort of all work together in unison to help promote a site to the top of search engine results and help drive in like qualified traffic that helps your business move toward its goals. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, I've had people before who they want an audit. I'll you know, run a full audit for them. And then they'll say, okay, well, can you just fix the on-page stuff? And I'm like, no, I'm not just going to fix one element of it, because you will not see results from that. They'll just have a really optimized front end with nobody being able to see what's going on the back end.
That's so good. I really like that. Those are good advice. I'm just about to wrap up. I love asking this question. What would be, if you had one piece of advice to founders or marketers about SEO, what would be that one advice be?
Yeah, I would say to invest in it earlier on, especially if you appreciate the approach that SEO is like a really great marketing foundation. I think, like I said, a lot of people are like, okay, We'll invest in SEO in a couple years. First, we'll put a bunch of money into paid and social and advertising and stuff like that. And I think all of those other disciplines could benefit greatly from having an SEO sort of foundation. So if you're starting a business out and you don't know which sort of marketer to hire first, I would definitely look to someone who has some search engine optimization experience and keyword research and stuff like that.
Good stuff. And just one final question. Where can people find out more about you and your work online? Whether, you know, where do you want to direct people or the listeners to from the show?
Sure. So my website is searchhermit.com. And then I also host SEO chat on Twitter every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that's essentially where SEOs from across the world and people who, like, of all levels, people who are new at SEO, people who have been doing it for 10 plus years, we sort of all come together and we talk about a new topic each week. So if you want to learn about SEO or you want to get other people's perspectives on a project that you're working on or a topic you're interested in, it sort of brings everyone together and we can all chat about different things going on and everybody learns, and you can find new SEOs to follow on Twitter as well. That's a fun one. And that's, like I said, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern time, and it's just the hashtag SEO chat.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'll make sure to add that in the show notes as well as your website.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So that's it for this episode. My takeaways from this episode. First, invest in SEO early on. Now, paid and social advertising can benefit greatly from having an SEO foundation. Second, meaningful user engagement depends on your business model. Take a look at the micro conversions along the way, whether that's signing up for an email, filling out a form, or scheduling a phone call. And third, to increase your website's user engagement, lead visitors to the next step in solving their problem, whether that's another content or one of your pages. Did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode on Twitter at RamleyJohn or email ramley@growthtoday.fm. I'd love to hear from you. Tell me what you're excited about these days and what project you're working on. Now, before we end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. And if you're interested about getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growthtoday to sponsor this podcast for as little as $2 per episode. That's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.